This is Ashley Hodge with a Sikkim 365 post-game podcast. We're coming to you with Grayson Grunhafer after Baylor's 73-70 win over Iowa State. And what a thrilling game. Grayson, I know you were there taking in the action live. Give me some thoughts on what you saw tonight.
Yeah, it was really cool. I was on the court filming, of course, doing some highlights for the website, but it was a really intense game. I felt like Baylor played really hard. The beginning of the game, it didn't start off the way Baylor had hoped, getting down, I think it was 21-14 early in that game. And, you know, Iowa State hit a couple shots, a couple tough shots that went in. But Baylor really settled in, and, you know, them working really hard allowed them to overcome, you know, some of the things that maybe they didn't do well tonight. But because they played hard, it kind of made up for all of it. And, you know, they were able to really grind out a big win against a really good team, a team that I think I don't know if I want to say predict it yet, but I think they might be the best team in the Big 12, and I think they might win the Big 12. So that's how big of a win I think this is for Baylor, and a great way to increase your RPI and a great way to kind of move along in the conference play knowing you already have a big win like that.
Yeah, there's no question. Some of the things that stood out to me is, number one, Baylor had to control the glass, and I thought they did a good job, especially in critical moments, of out-rebounding Iowa State. Late in the game, King McClure had two big offensive rebounds, one that he put back for an and-one, got a three-point play on that, and then another one where he saved a possession. He was falling out of bounds. He was able to call a timeout after Mekhi Mason hit one shot really late in the game with under a minute left. So those are huge rebounds. Mario Kegler did a great job on the boards. He had 10 rebounds. You know, surprisingly, you only had two rebounds from Mark Vidal. So to out-rebound Iowa State 33-26 and only have two of those rebounds coming from Mark Vidal, that's pretty good work, because Mark's usually the guy that carries the water from a rebounding standpoint. And only four rebounds from Tristan Clark. And then obviously we got to talk about two really good offensive performances from Mekhi Mason. Ended up with 25 points. Set the tone early with some three-point shooting. Was 4-for-9 from three-point range. Closed out the game 5-for-6 from the free throw line. And then Devontae Bandu was huge. Only 11 minutes, but 13 points. 3-for-4 from three. You mentioned falling down 21-14, but then Baylor went on a 24-9 run to close the half to be up 38-30. Is that right? 38-30 at halftime. So
yeah, I think that's
right. Yeah, huge run. What'd you think?
Well, one thing I want to add about that run, and you talked about him a little bit, Devontae Bandu hit 8 points in a minute and a half.
Right.
And I don't know if you realize that, but yeah, he just got hot in streak. Because in the second half, I believe his 5 points came on back-to-back possessions. Or no, I'm sorry, he hit a three,
yep,
and then he made the two free throws at the end. But
right.
He was huge. And honestly, you brought up Mark Vidal, and I'm just going to be honest. I think that Devontae Bandu needs to get some more minutes. And I think that Mark Vidal might be one of the guys that loses some minutes here and there in certain games, especially when the matchup is not very good. But what I saw from Bandu tonight is something I've seen from him all year long. And he's one of the – I think he's maybe – there's probably two guys on this team where I say if they're open, more times than not, they're making the shot. And so far that year – this year, in my opinion, it's been Bandu and Mekhi Mason.
Right.
They're open. They're knocking down shots. Everyone else has kind of been up and down game to game. But I think Bandu needs to be on the floor more just because he can shoot the ball. He makes jump shots. And I know he can be a little bit of a liability on the defensive end. But he needs to get some more minutes. I really believe that. And you mentioned Mario Kegler. And one, you know, you talked about the King McClure rebound. That rebound and three-point play doesn't happen if Kegler doesn't get in there and knock the ball around down
right
to McClure. I mean, and Kegler was all over the place on the glass. This was the most active I think I've seen him all year long. He was flying in there with reckless abandon, and he allowed for a lot of second chance opportunities for Baylor, and I was impressed with his effort tonight, and that's what Baylor needs from him. I wish he could score more than seven, but the 10 rebounds were big.
You know, you brought up a great point. I was listening to a podcast with Kelvin Sampson today, the coach at Houston, and he talked about how they track tips off of offensive rebounds. He thinks that's a really key stat just for a guy to be able to get a hand on a ball and knock it up in the air and keep a possession alive and give an offensive rebounder an opportunity to go get the ball. And so Kegler did that several times. Mark Vidal's really good at that as well. But, you know, Kegler, he had three offensive rebounds, but I think you're right. He had a couple other tips where he just kept the ball alive and allowed our other guys to get an offensive rebound, which is critical to winning. I mean, you know, having that one tip that he made to King, I mean, that's the difference between winning and losing, because you keep a possession alive. And when you give a good offensive team like Iowa State less possessions, you have a much greater chance to win that game.
Yeah, absolutely. And you just another thing that Kegler did that probably was one of those might not have thought about plays. You know, Iowa State was able to get a rebound, and Kegler just snuck in and got his hands on the ball and got a jump ball for the Bears as well late in that game, which gave Baylor another possession.
Right.
I believe that was with under a minute left. I mean, it was big. It was a huge play for Baylor. And so, I don't know. I just think, you know, there were things about his game that I saw today, his activity, and really it was from all of these guys. I mean, Mekhi Mason flying on the floor, I think, three times on one possession.
Yep.
To get a loose ball. I mean, you look at the number, six steals for the Bears, three blocks. That's good hustle stats. They out-rebounded on the offensive side 10-4 offensive rebounds over Iowa State.
Right.
And then they got to the free throw line 20 times. And they actually made free throws today, but they were able to get to the line 20 times. And that, to me, is a team playing hard. That's what that tells me.
Yeah, and we cannot end this podcast without mentioning that Mark Vidal went 2-for-2 from the free throw line. That was really good to see. You know, hopefully he can string some more free throw streaks like that together in future games, because that would be huge. If he can start making free throws, that's a big, big boost to his game, and obviously helps Baylor tremendously. You know, I want to point out from Iowa State's side, they've got two really talented freshmen, Tyrese Haliburton, who only had 7 points, but he had a long 3-point shot early in the game. And then I thought Talen Horton Tucker really kept them in the ball game with some clutch 3-point shooting. He had two pressure 3-point shots that they needed to have in order for them to have a chance to win that game. And I mean, these guys, to be freshmen, have a lot of poise and, you know, really are going to be a problem in the league this year. I know Tyrese Haliburton's on pretty high on a lot of draft boards, so he managed to stick around long, but I just wanted to point out how good those freshmen are. And, you know, obviously Shayok is their leading scorer and has played terrific. And we know Wigginton's going to be a huge piece for them as he's coming back from injury, but that's a really good team, as you mentioned earlier.
Yeah. I think that's kind of the biggest key right there. You know, Tucker Horton and Haliburton, they're good players, but one of them is going to go to the bench here in a little bit, because Lindell Wigginton, once he gets his feet under him, he's going to be an absolute problem for teams. And he was a problem for Baylor tonight, frankly. I mean, he had 11 points in just 24 minutes. And I think once he gets his touch back and gets his rhythm back, he coming into the year was probably thought to be their best player. Obviously, not all of us have seen Shayok before, and he clearly is, but Wigginton is right there with him, and Wyler Babb is another really good player, and they just have a lot of tall guards that can guard a bunch of different positions. They all can make shots. I mean, yeah, that is a tough team, but I think we saw tonight kind of what their key is going to be. If Cam Lard is not in the game, that you can exploit them down low really badly. I mean, Tristan Clark, when Solomon Young came in for Iowa State, whenever he was in the game, I mean, Baylor fed Tristan Clark every time, and it was almost an automatic bucket every single time. And I was impressed with Baylor doing that, but I think that's probably Iowa State's biggest weakness if Lard's not in the game, because we know the kind of rim protector Lard is.
Yeah, and even Michael Jacobson, the transfer from Nebraska, he's a good player, but clearly overmatched against Tristan Clark. I mean, Tristan's just so strong. He's so quick and was able to really get any shot he wanted. And I think one thing Coach Drew brought up in the post game about Tristan was that they ran the offense through him all game long. Iowa State double teams a lot. And Tristan, you know, did a really good job making decisions out of the double teams. 3 assists, ended up scoring 16 points, but no turnovers. You know, so really some huge improvement from him in that area. He's a good passer out of double teams, but there's been times when that's flustered him, especially down the stretch. And I think tonight he really showed a lot of maturity in making the right basketball play and getting the ball in the hands of Mekhi Mason and even Jared Butler, you know, sometimes just to be able to get a quality shot attempt off without turning it over.
Yeah, I thought so too. That's a big stat. Anytime Tristan doesn't have a single turnover, that's big, because we know how much they like beating Tristan Clark and like running the offense through him. And if he's not making bad decisions, they're going to continue to do that. And I feel like, yeah, he was very efficient in this game, and that was great to see. I also think, you know, and we've known this probably since the beginning of the year, but it's just becoming more and more evident. You know, Baylor has a guy they can rely on in crunch time, and that's going to be big. If Mekhi Mason can stay healthy, they have a guy that they, every time late in the game, that's who they're giving the ball to. And he's come through more times than not. And I was really impressed with him again closing this game out. He made some big free throws late in the game and made that huge got fouled, got in the lane. He just does a lot of variety of things, and he's just a great closer for this team. And, you know, Scott Drew's had a lot of good closers at point guard, and it's good to know that this team has one as well.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, let's talk about the crowd a little bit. The crowd was what you would expect for Iowa State at a 6 o'clock tip in Waco when the students aren't back. I mean, it was not a full house, but, you know, there were not a lot of Iowa State fans there compared to some past years. I think that they've been trained that when they come to Waco, they're going to take an L. You know, it's amazing how many times Baylor has beaten a ranked Iowa State team in Waco. And they're all close games, but, you know, Iowa State just really seems to have a curse over them when they come to Waco, and Baylor usually pulls those out. But the second thing is, you know, I want to give a shout-out because he practically begged for one to Bear Claw, who was sitting with me. He was on my row, and he was cheering very loud. We had Steeplechase Bear was there as well, and Brazos Bear. So we had a nice little rowdy section. But I did notice, Grayson, that as I looked across the court at Champions Row, on my side of the court, there was nobody standing up in crunch time in the last 2 minutes of the game. And it's almost like they were each given some kind of a sleeping pill or something. I was pretty disappointed in that, but I just wanted to mention that.
Yeah, I was pretty disappointed in that too. I was on the court, and so I could kind of see everyone, and, you know, people started standing up with about 30 seconds left. But
right.
Other than that, it was pretty few and far between, you know, those two sides standing up. And, yeah, the crowd was not great. And they really, you know, a big win like this, you would think that that's going to make a lot of people show up for that Kansas game. And, you know, we'll see. I don't know if it happens, but the students will be back, so there's no excuse there at least.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a great crowd. I would expect a capacity crowd. Baylor has typically done really well on Saturdays. And certainly coming off a big win like this, you would expect the Baylor fans to show up for the Saturday game against Kansas as we bid farewell to Bill Self and what is likely to be his last appearance in the Farrell Center. So I did. I did want to mention one thing. I was calculating the number of top 25 wins that Scott Drew now has at Baylor. And it's kind of some interesting stats here. This tonight was his 39th top 25 win since he's been at Baylor. And his 26th top 25 win since the 2013-2014 season. So the majority of those wins have come since 2013, you know, last 5 years. He's had at least two top 25 wins every year since 2007. Obviously, this is only his first this year, so he would have to get one more to keep that streak alive. But, you know, I think sometimes we take for granted, you know, we look back at past teams, we think about 2010, we had a great year that year, made the Elite Eight. 2012, another Elite Eight team. Those teams only had two top 25 wins in 2010 and three top 25 wins in 2012. But we're on a much better pace since 2013. I mean, we're averaging about five top 25 wins per year with only two last year. We beat Kansas and Texas Tech last year. But I just think it shows where the program is as a whole, to where top 25 teams come into the Farrell Center, and there's a good chance Baylor's going to win those games. And so I think, you know, it really is probably, you know, our program is in a lot healthier spot than most people realize.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And, you know, the thing about it is in the Big 12, you better be able to win your home games. I mean, that's just the way it is in this conference. And Baylor's been able to make the tournament, you know, obviously didn't make it last year, but have been able to make it pretty consistently. And, you know, I think that's kind of the formula. You have to be able to win home games, especially big home games. And this one right here is one of those that keeps you in the hunt for the NCAA tournament. But I was kind of thinking about earlier, I'm not sure what you think about this, but, you know, just talking about big wins, I think Baylor needs, how many games do you think Baylor needs to win to get in from here on out? How many more games?
Well, I think they have no shot if they don't go 9-9 in conference. And then I think even with 9-9 in conference, they're going to have to win some games in the Big 12 tournament. So I would
say 9-9 and a win over Bama.
Yes, for sure. Yeah, and they got to beat Alabama, no question. So,
okay. You
know, that I think would put them squarely on the bubble. Now, if they get to 10 to 11 wins in conference, I don't know if I still would feel 100% confident. It's probably going to depend on the wins that they have. But certainly beating Texas Tech, beating Kansas, you know, beating some of those better teams at home or on the road would be great, you know, for their resume. But, yeah, I'm not feeling comfortable unless they get to at least 18 to 19 wins on the season. So they have a lot of work to do, in other words.
Yeah, I think so, too. But I was just kind of thinking about it. This makes it a little more manageable.
Right.
If they can go 9-9 in conference and beat Bama, I think that gets them in.
Right.
I really do. I think that would at least get them very, very close, because – I think that would just about do it. But yeah, they might still need to win a Big 12 game to get in. I was just thinking about it earlier, because I know it's the beginning of conference play, but everyone's going to start mattering now.
Right. And, you know, it's the Big 12, the great thing about the league is it gives you opportunities for quality wins like we saw tonight. So, you know, and the bubble is always a lot weaker than we expect. I do think they would probably be in pretty good shape if they beat Bama, if they get 9 conference wins, and if they win one Big 12 tournament game, they would be in good shape. And obviously that would be huge, given the fact that they've dropped some pretty bad games at home to Stephen F. Austin and Texas Southern. And of course the Wichita State road loss is looking, you know, pretty bad as well, because Wichita State's not a very good team. One other thing I wanted to mention, I'm on KenPom right now, and KenPom has started to rate the officials, and they give them ratings based on some criteria, and I just noticed this for the first time. So tonight we had Roger Ayers, who is number 7th rated official in college basketball, but we had Marcus Pettigrew, number 72 rated official, and Gary Maxwell, number 74. I did notice, I think Ayers was on Mekhi Mason, was right closest to the ball and did a no call on that, a heave by Nick Weiler-Babb at the buzzer. And I noticed on the Iowa State message boards that they're pretty upset that that wasn't called a foul. And the TV announcer, I just saw the highlight. I haven't watched the TV replay yet, but he was saying that it was a foul as well. But from my angle, it just shows you where angles can sometimes tell you a different story. I thought Mekhi tried to reach in, and then he pulled back, and it looked like a clean play. And I'm sure glad that Roger Ayers let that play go. If he had called a foul on that, I think it would have been a pretty terrible way to end that game, giving him a chance to go to overtime on a desperation shot like that.
Yeah, I have to be honest, though.
You thought it was a foul?
It was.
Wow.
And my biggest issue is, and I think that this is just kind of my years of playing basketball. I was watching the coaches, and they were telling Mason to foul. And
okay.
So
to put him on the line to shoot two shots.
Yeah, and so that's why I was really confused when Mekhi Mason let Weiler-Babb get all the way to half court.
Right.
Didn't make sense at all. And then you look at from what I could see, I saw Mekhi reach. And for me, just my personal opinion, if I was on the other side, if a guy is trying to foul and he reaches, you can't really tell how much he gets of him.
Right.
But for me as a ref, that's an automatic call. And so it is a tough way for Iowa State to lose, and I get their gripe with it. But I've seen so many Baylor games go, the same way. There's a call here or there that makes a big difference. This just happened to be on the last play of the game. But I also don't like seeing calls, that at the very end of a game when they should just be letting the players play, especially on a desperation like that. But, yeah, very confusing, very risky, and almost really costly for the Baylor Bears.
Interesting. So, yeah, my angle said it wasn't a foul, but I'll defer to you on that. The other one was Wigington's flop, I guess, so to speak, where he pushed his body into McClure. King's got to do a better job of contesting without making any contact at all. But Wigington's a pro at getting that contact. And there was a couple of shots where he tried to do that early in the game, and the officials did not call it, but they gave him that one. It was Pettigrew was the official that gave him that call, and I thought that was a pretty bad call. But in the end, it did not end up mattering, and I know that Baylor had a pretty wide discrepancy in free throw attempts, 20-8. So overall, Baylor fans got to feel like they got a pretty fair shake on officiating, maybe a little favoritism, which is about time. But great win for Baylor, and hopefully all Baylor fans come out Saturday to watch a good game against Kansas and Bill Self's last go-around at the Farrell Center.
You think he's done, huh?
Oh, he's done. Yeah, I've got a special shirt for him. I don't want to spoil the surprise, but I'm going to communicate a message to him on my T-shirt that I'm going to wear that game. Mm-hmm. And I would say, he's either going to take a soft landing somewhere, an NBA job, an analyst job. He's going to suddenly have health problems like Urban Meyer. But I will predict he's coached his last game at Kansas when the season ends this year.
Wow, that is a bold prediction. So how do you think the Farrell Center treats him in his supposed last game ever at Kansas at Farrell Center?
Well, I think they should do exactly what they did with Gino Auriemma, and that's, give him a standing ovation, because he has achieved a level of excellence that is hard to achieve. I think we probably should just ignore the fact that there's been some indiscretions along the way, maybe a very long list of indiscretions, but You know, I think we should give them a standing ovation and just recognize excellence. And, you know, even though they probably won't win the league this year, he has put together an outstanding streak that, you know, officials have played a big part in, but it, you know, still a very impressive streak, and it needs to be recognized for what it is.
Who do you think wins the game?
I think Baylor's going to win the game. I think Kansas is a team struggling to find their identity. Their guards are not as good as they've been in the past. And I just believe Mekhi Mason is a big game player, you know, and I think we've seen that. He's against Arizona, against Oregon, against Iowa State. He's really good. And, you know, I have a hard time believing Devin Dotson, a freshman, is going to slow him down. So I think Baylor comes out on top.
Yeah, I'm actually right there with you. I think Baylor comes out on top, and really it's because of Kansas's huge loss of Udoka. Because
right.
Baylor has no answer for Udoka, especially if Udoka and Dedrick Lawson are on the floor at the same time. That would be a nightmare problem for Baylor. I think Tristan Clark would get in a ton of foul trouble in that situation. And so I think Baylor's able to win without him in there. I think the matchups are just a lot better with, you know, and really a lot better for everyone in the league when Azubuike's not playing. And so I think Baylor's able to get that win as well. And how about that start to conference play? If they're able to start 2-1 with a win over Kansas and Iowa State, that would be big.
It would be big. And I think watching Kansas play TCU at home tomorrow is going to be a really interesting matchup. You know, I mean, Kansas, KenPom predicts 71-66 Kansas on Saturday. So, you know, obviously we've all seen lots of games in Waco where it has not gone Baylor's way. But in recent years, Baylor is closing the gap. I think Scott Drew has figured out Bill Self to some degree. And they've been so close. And so hopefully this will be similar to last year where it's close at the end, but Baylor makes the plays down the stretch to pull away. And that would be a great ending to Bill Self's visits to Waco.
Yeah, and if you're a Baylor fan, you want Kansas to win that TCU game. Because
right.
If Kansas comes into Baylor with two straight losses, you know the refs are going to come out, and if they lose to TCU, then I'm switching my prediction immediately. They can't. No way are they going to let them lose three times in a row. That doesn't happen. And so yeah, definitely cheering for Kansas big time against TCU in that game. And you know, I did want to talk about one more thing. The freshmen for Baylor really struggled in this game. And
yeah.
I think we're kind of going to see that a little bit throughout the year. But 0-5 from the freshmen, Flo Tomba, Jared Butler, and Matthew Meyer. And it was not a good performance at all. Butler had 3 turnovers. Meyer had 1 incredibly terrible turnover. Flo missed a bunny at the
right.
rim. They just did not perform well, and Baylor was still able to win. But that's going to be something to watch because I don't think Baylor can survive many games when those three play that bad, especially Jared Butler. He has got to play better. But, you know, Meyer was coming off such a big performance, and so the thought was, oh, he's going to be able to do this every game maybe, but he's just very inconsistent still, and that just goes with youth.
I will say there was one really key play with under 2 or 3 minutes left where Butler was able to strip one of the Iowa State players defensively and get the steal. And I thought that was a winning play. I love Butler. I'm all on board the Jared Butler train. I think he's competitive. He plays with such energy. Yeah, he made some stupid turnovers. There's no question about that. But I love his upside, and I think our backcourt is going to be hell next year with him and Davion Mitchell and Maceo Teague. That is going to be a terrific backcourt. So I'm excited about the future of our guards. And who knows, maybe Mekhi Mason decides he wants to apply for a hardship and gets one more year in a Baylor Bear uniform. That wouldn't be terrible either. That would be awesome. But I'm not counting on that.
There's not enough minutes for him to come back too. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, you'd figure that out. I mean, you I think you'd play three guards. Yeah. but certainly, you know, that's wishful thinking. I think you're right. I think he's probably going to be done with basketball after this year at Baylor, but something to think about, and hopefully we will continue to see improvement from our freshmen, because we're going to need them. You know, if we're going to make the tournament, we have got to have big time performances from all three of those guys as the year goes on.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think another big development we're seeing is that I don't believe Mario Kegler is at the level to go pro.
Right.
That's just my personal opinion right now. I haven't seen any flashes that tell me he's a pro player yet. And that's honestly really good news for next year, because they really need him to come back next season. And, you know, he's going to get better. I really believe that. I think he's going to turn into one of the better players on this team eventually. But, you know, he showed great effort tonight, but I don't know if his skill set is quite there yet.
Yep. He could use some refinement, no doubt. Well, hey, this has been a Sikkim 365 podcast. Once again, Baylor with a big win over number 20 Iowa State, 73-70. Thank you, Grayson. And we will check in after the Kansas win on Saturday. Hopefully win. Have a good one.